The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of its hosts, guests, or callers, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WTBR-FM, its management, other producers, or sponsors.
Hello, this is Margaret Dixon on Page Turners at 89.7 WTBR-FM Pittsfield Radio. We are continuing to read The House on the Borderland by William Hope Hodgson. It gets stranger and stranger with every chapter, and every time I think it can't get stranger, it continues to surprise me. So let's see where it takes us today. The Green Star. The world was held in a savage gloom, cold and intolerable. Outside, all was quiet. Quiet! From the dark room behind me came the occasional soft thud of falling matter, fragments of rotting stone. So time passed, and night grasped the world, wrapping it in wrappings of impenetrable darkness. There was no night sky as we know it. Even the few struggling stars had vanished conclusively. I might have been in a shuttered room without a light for all that I could see. Only, in the impalpableness of gloom, opposite burnt that vast encircling hair of dull fire. Beyond this, there was no ray at all in the vastitude of night that surrounded me. Save that, far in the north, that soft, mist-like glow still shone. Silently, years moved on. What period of time passed, I shall never know. It seemed to me, waiting there, that eternities came and went stealthily, and still I watched. I could see only the glow of the sun's edge at times, for now it had commenced to come and go, lighting up a while and again becoming extinguished. All at once, during one of these periods of life, a sudden flame cut across the night. A quick glare that lit up the dead earth shortly, giving me a glimpse of its flat lonesomeness. The light appeared to come from the sun, shooting out from somewhere near its center diagonally. A moment I gazed, startled. Then the leaping flame sank and the gloom fell again. But now it was not so dark, and the sun was belted by a thin line of vivid white light. I stared intently. Had a volcano broken out on the sun? Yet I negatived the thought as soon as formed. I felt that the light had been far too intensely white and large for such a cause. Another idea there was that suggested itself to me. It was that one of the inner planets had fallen into the sun, becoming incandescent under that impact. This theory appealed to me as being more plausible and accounting more satisfactorily for the extraordinary size and brilliance of the blaze that had lit up the dead world so unexpectedly. Full of interest and emotion, I stared across the darkness at that line of white fire cutting the night. One thing had told me unmistakably. The sun was yet rotating at an enormous speed. Thus I knew that the years were still fleeting at an incalculable rate. Though so far as the earth was concerned, life and light and time were things belonging to a period lost in the long-ago ages. After that one burst of flame, the light had shone only as an encircling band of bright fire. Now, however, as I watched, it began slowly to sink into a ruddy tint and later to a dark copper-red color, much as the sun had done. Presently it sank to a deeper hue, and in glowing and anon dying. Thus, after a great while, it disappeared. Long before this, the smoldering edge of the sun had deadened into blackness. And so, in that supremely future time, the world, dark and intensely silent, rode on its gloomy orbit around the ponderous mass of the dead sun. My thoughts at this period can be scarcely described. At first they were chaotic and wanting in coherence. But later, as the ages came and went, my soul seemed to imbibe the very essence of the oppressive solitude and dreariness that held the earth. With this feeling there came a wonderful clearness of thought, and I realized despairingly that the world might wander forever through that enormous night. For a while, the unwholesome idea filled me with a sensation of overbearing desolation, so that I could have cried like a child. In time, however, this feeling grew almost insensibly less, and an unreasoning hope possessed me. Patiently I waited. From time to time, the noise of dropping particles behind in the room came dully to my ears. Once I heard a loud crash and turned instinctively to look, forgetting for the moment the impenetrable night in which every detail was submerged. And while my gaze sought the heavens, turning unconsciously towards the north, yes, the nebulous glow still showed. Indeed, I could have almost imagined that it looked somewhat plainer. For a long time, I kept my gaze upon it, feeling in my lonely soul that soft haze was in some way a tie with the past. Strange, the trifles from which one can suck comfort. And yet, had I but known... But I shall come to that in its proper time. For a very long space, I watched without experiencing any of the desire for sleep that would so soon have visited me in the old earth days. How I should have welcomed it, if only to have passed the time, away from my perplexities and thoughts. Several times, the comfortless sound of some great piece of masonry falling disturbed my meditations, and once it seemed I could hear whispering in the room behind me. Yet it was utterly useless to try to see anything. Such blackness as existed scarcely can be conceived. It was palpable and hideously brutal to the sense as though something dead pressed up against me. Something soft and icily cold. Under all this, there grew up within my mind a great and overwhelming distress of uneasiness that left me but to drop me into an uncomfortable brooding. I felt that I must fight against it, and presently, hoping to distract my thoughts, I turned to the window and looked up towards the north in search of the nebulous whiteness, which still I believed to be the far and misty glowing of the universe we had left. Even as I raised my eyes, I was thrilled with a feeling of wonder. For now, the hazy light had resolved into a single great star of vivid green. As I stared, astonished, the thought flashed into my mind that the Earth must be traveling towards the star, not away, as I'd imagined. Next, that it could not be the universe the Earth had left, but possibly an outlying star belonging to some vast star cluster hidden in the enormous depths of space. With a sense of commingled awe and curiosity, I watched it, wondering what new thing was to be revealed to me. For a while, vague thoughts and speculations occupied me, during which my gaze dwelt insatiably upon that one spot of light in the otherwise pit-like darkness. Hope grew up within me, banishing the oppression of despair that had seemed to stifle me. Wherever the earth was traveling, it was, at least, going once more towards the realms of light. Light! One must spend an eternity wrapped in soundless night to understand the full horror of being without it. Slowly but surely, the star grew upon my vision until in time it shone as brightly as had the planet Jupiter in the old Earth days. With increased size, its color became more impressive, reminding me of a huge emerald, scintillating rays of fire across the world. Years fled away in silence, and the green star grew into a great splash of flame in the sky. A little later, I saw a thing that filled me with amazement. It was the ghostly outline of a vast crescent in the night, a gigantic new moon, seeming to be growing out of the surrounding gloom. Utterly bemused, I stared at it. It appeared to be quite close, comparatively, and I puzzled to understand how the Earth had come so near to it without my having seen it before. The light thrown by the star grew stronger, and presently I was aware that it was possible to see the Earthscape again, though indistinctly. A while I stared, trying to make out whether I could distinguish any detail of the world's surface, but I found the light insufficient. In a little, I gave up the attempt and glanced once more towards the star. Even in the short space that my attention had been diverted, it had increased considerably and seemed now, to my bewildered sight, about a quarter of the size of the full moon. The light it threw was extraordinarily powerful, yet its color was so abominably unfamiliar that such of the world as I could see showed unreal, more as though I looked out upon a landscape of shadow than aught else. All this time, the great crescent was increasing in brightness and began now to shine with a perceptible shade of green. Steadily, the star increased in size and brilliancy until it showed fully as large as half a full moon. And as it grew greater and brighter, so did the vast crescent throw out more and more light, though of an ever-deepening hue of green. Under the combined blaze of their radiance, the wilderness that stretched before me became steadily more visible. Soon I seemed able to stare across the whole world, which now appeared beneath the strange light, terrible in its cold and awful flat dreariness. It was a little later that my attention was drawn to the fact that the great star of green flame was slowly sinking out of the north towards the east. At first I could scarcely believe that I saw right, but soon there could be no doubt that it was so. Gradually it sank, and as it fell, the vast crescent of glowing green began to dwindle and dwindle until it became a mere arc of light against the livid colored sky. Later it vanished, disappearing in the self-same spot from which I had seen it slowly emerge. By this time, the star had come to within some 30 degrees of the hidden horizon. In size, it could now have rivaled the moon at its full, though even yet I could not distinguish its disk. This fact led me to conceive that it was, still, an extraordinary distance away, and this being so, I knew that size must be huge, beyond the conception of man to understand or imagine. Suddenly, as I watched, the lower edge of the star vanished, cut by a straight, dark line. A minute or a century passed, and it dipped lower until the half of it had disappeared from sight. Far away out on the great plain, I saw a monstrous shadow blotting it out and advancing swiftly. Only a third of the star was visible now. Then, like a flash, the solution of this extraordinary phenomenon revealed itself to me. The star was sinking behind the enormous mass of the dead sun. Or rather, the sun, obedient to its attraction, was rising towards it, with the earth following in its trail. As these thoughts expanded in my mind, the star vanished, being completely hidden by the tremendous bulk of the sun. Over the earth there fell once more the brooding night. With the darkness came an intolerable feeling of loneliness and dread. For the first time, I thought of the pit and its inmates. After that, there rose in my memory the still more terrible thing that had haunted the shores of the Sea of Sleep and lurked in the shadows of this old building. Where were they? I wondered and shivered with miserable thoughts. For a time, fear held me, and I prayed wildly and incoherently for some ray of light with which to dispel the cold blackness that enveloped the world. How long I waited is impossible to say, certainly for a very great period. Then, all at once, I saw a loom of light shine out ahead. Gradually, it became more distant. Suddenly, a ray of vivid green flashed across the darkness. At the same moment, I saw a thin line of livid flame far in the night. An instant, it seemed, and it had grown into a great clot of fire, beneath which the world lay bathed in a blaze of emerald green light. Steadily it grew until presently the whole of the green star had come into sight again. But now it could be scarcely called a star, for it had increased to vast proportions, being incomparably greater than the sun had been in the olden time. Then, as I stared, I became aware that I could see the edge of the lifeless sun, glowing like a great crescent moon, Slowly, its lighted surface broadened out to me until half of its diameter was visible and the star began to drop away on my right. Time passed and the Earth moved on, slowly traversing the tremendous face of the dead sun. Gradually, as the Earth traveled forward, the star fell still more to the right, until at last it shone on the back of the house, sending a flood of broken rays in through the skeleton-like walls. Glancing upwards, I saw that much of the ceiling had vanished, enabling me to see that the upper stories were even more decayed. The roof had evidently gone entirely, and I could see the green effulgence of the starlight shining in slantingly. Very strange so far, but that's nothing new. We'll see how much weirder it gets, but first, a message from our sponsors.
Pittsfield Community Radio, 89.7 WTBR-FM Pittsfield, 88.1 WSBR Lee.
Support for WTBR comes from Berkshire Community College. Free community college for any Massachusetts resident without a bachelor's degree at BCC. Find out more at berkshirecc.edu. And from Sundrini Awnings and Home Improvement, providing awnings and canopies in Western Mass. Retractable awnings, retractable screens, gutter and gutter protection systems, commercial awnings and screen rooms. Customized solutions available. Online at sondrini.com.
Still paying for that monthly gym membership? How about that streaming service you never watch? Why not support WTBR-FM instead? For just $8.97 a month, you could show your support for our community radio station today. Go to WTBRFM.com and click donate. It's as easy as that. We need to support this station to keep it on the air, and every little bit helps. WTBR-FM, for the love of radio.
Living Recovery is a peer recovery support center located in downtown Pittsfield. We welcome all who have struggled with addiction or those affected by another's addiction.
What have you learned while being involved at Living in Recovery?
I can own my own recovery path.
What has been your experience at Living in Recovery?
It's a family.
What keeps you coming back to Living in Recovery?
The live events.
For more information on Living in Recovery, visit our website, livingrecoverypittsfield.org, or phone us at 413-570-8243.
Let's have a party with all our friends. Let's have a good time. Don't let it end. We got the people.
Hey, friends. If you're looking for some party music, tune in to Polka Express with me, Bill Gustavus, every Wednesday night from 6 to 8 and Sunday mornings from 8 to 10, right here on 89.7 WTBR, Pittsfield, Massachusetts.
Support for WTBR comes from Greylock Federal Credit Union, proud to support high school arts and sports programs to help our community thrive. Greylock Federal, with locations throughout the Berkshires and online at greylock.org.
And from UCP of Western Massachusetts. UCP of Western Mass is hiring full and part-time opportunities to provide a life without limits for people with disabilities. For more information, ucpwma.org/jobs.
Ron, where are you?
I'm in a glass case of emotion.
WTBR.
And we're back. For those just tuning in, this is Margaret Dixon on Page Turners, continuing to read The House on the Borderland by William Hope Hodgson. The End of the Solar System. From the abutment where once had been the windows through which I had watched that first fatal dawn, I could see that the sun was hugely greater than it had been when first the star lit the world. So great was it that its lower edge seemed almost to touch the far horizon. Even as I watched, I imagined that it drew closer. The radiance of green that lit the frozen earth grew steadily brighter. Thus, for a long space, things were. Then, on a sudden, I saw the sun was changing shape and growing smaller, just as the moon would have done in past time. In a while, only a third of the illuminated part was turned towards the earth. The star bore away on the left. Gradually, as the world moved on, the star shone upon the front of the house once more, while the sun showed only as a great bow of green fire. An instant, it seemed, and the sun had vanished. The star was still fully visible. Then the earth moved into the black shadow of the sun, and all was night. Night, black, starless, and intolerable. Filled with tumultuous thoughts, I watched across the night, waiting. Years it may have been, and then, in the dark house behind me, the clotted stillness of the world was broken. I seemed to hear a soft padding of many feet, and a faint, inarticulate whisper of sound grew in my sense. I looked round into the blackness and saw a multitude of eyes. As I stared, they increased and appeared to come towards me. For an instant, I stood, unable to move. Then a hideous swine noise rose up into the night, and at that I leapt from the window out into the frozen world. I have a confused notion of having run a while, and after that I just waited. Several times I heard shrieks, but always as though from a distance. Except for those sounds, I had no idea of the whereabouts of the house. Time moved onward. I was conscious of little save a sensation of cold and hopelessness and fear. An age, it seemed, and there came a glow that told of the coming light. It grew tardily. Then, with a loom of unearthly glory, the first ray from the green star struck over the edge of the dark sun and lit the world. It fell upon a great ruined structure some 200 yards away. It was the house. Staring, I saw a fearsome sight. Over its walls crawled a legion of unholy things, almost covering the old building, from tottering towers to base. I could see them plainly. They were the swine creatures. The world moved out into the light of the star, and I saw that now it seemed to stretch across a quarter of the heavens. The glory of its livid night was so tremendous that it appeared to fill the sky with quivering flames. Then I saw the sun. It was so close that half of its diameter lay below the horizon, and as the world circled across its face, it seemed to tower right up into the sky, a stupendous dome of emerald-colored fire. From time to time, I glanced toward the house, but the swine thing seemed unaware of my proximity. Years appeared to pass slowly. The earth had almost reached the center of the sun's disk. The light from the green sun, as now it must be called, shone through the interstices that gapped the moldered walls of the old house, giving them the appearance of being wrapped in green flames. The swine creature still crawled about the walls. Suddenly there rose a loud roar of swine voices, and up from the center of the roofless house shot a vast column of blood-red flame. I saw the little twisted towers and turrets flash into fire, yet still preserving their twisted crookedness. The beams of the green sun beat upon the house and intermingled with its lurid glows, so that it appeared a blazing furnace of red and green fire. Fascinated, I watched until an overwhelming sense of coming danger drew my attention. I glanced up, and at once it was borne upon me that the sun was closer, so close, in fact, that it seemed to overhang the world. Then, I know not how, I was caught up into strange heights, floating like a bubble in the awful effulgence. Far below me, I saw the earth with the burning house leaping into an ever-growing mountain of flame. Round about it, the ground appeared to be glowing, and in places, heavy wreaths of yellow smoke ascended from the earth. It seemed as though the world were becoming ignited from that one plague spot of fire. Faintly, I could see the swine things. They appeared quite unharmed. Then the ground seemed to cave in suddenly, and the house with its load of foul creatures disappeared into the depths of the earth, sending a strange blood-colored cloud into the heights. I remembered the hell pit under the house. In a while, I looked round. The huge bulk of the sun rose high above me. The distance between it and the earth grew rapidly less. Suddenly, the earth appeared to shoot forward. In a moment, it had traversed the space between it and the sun. I heard no sound, but out from the sun's face gushed an ever-growing tongue of dazzling flame. It seemed to leap almost to the distant green sun, shearing through the emerald light a very cataract of blinding fire. It reached its limit and sank, and on the earth glowed a vast splash of burning white, the grave of the earth. The sun was very close to me now. Presently I found that I was rising higher until at last I rode above it in the emptiness. The green sun was now so huge that its breadth seemed to fill up all the sky ahead. I looked down and noted that the sun was passing directly beneath me. A year may have gone by, or a century, and I was left suspended alone. The sun showed far in front, a black circular mass against the molten splendor of the great green orb. Near one edge, I observed that a lurid glow had appeared, marking the place where the earth had fallen. By this, I knew that the long-dead sun was still revolving, though with great slowness. Afar to my right, I seemed to catch at times a faint glow of whitish light. For a great time, I was uncertain whether to put this down to fancy or not. Thus, for a while, I stared with fresh wonderings until at last I knew that it was no imaginary thing, but a reality. It grew brighter, and presently there slid out of the green a pale globe of softest white. It came nearer, and I saw that it was apparently surrounded by a robe of gently glowing clouds. Time passed. I glanced towards the diminishing sun. It showed only as a dark blot on the face of the green sun. As I watched, I saw it grow smaller steadily, as though rushing towards the superior orb at an immense speed. Intently, I stared. What would happen? I was conscious of extraordinary emotions as I realized it would strike the green sun. It grew no bigger than a pea, and I looked with my whole soul to witness the final end of our system, that system which had borne the world through so many eons with its multitudinous sorrows and joys. And now, suddenly, something crossed my vision, cutting from sight all vestige of the spectacle I watched with such soul interest. What happened to the dead sun I did not see, but I have no reason, in the light of which I saw afterwards, to disbelieve that it fell into the strange fire of the green sun and so perished. And then, suddenly, an extraordinary question rose in my mind, whether this stupendous globe of green fire might not be the vast central sun, the great sun round which our universe and countless others revolve. I felt confused. I thought of the probable end of the dead sun, and another suggestion came dumbly. Do the dead stars make the green sun their grave? The idea appealed to me with no sense of grotesqueness, but rather as something both possible and probable. The celestial globes. For a while, many thoughts crowded my mind, so that I was unable to do aught save stare blindly before me. I seemed whelmed in a sea of doubt and wonder and sorrowful remembrance. It was later that I came out of my bewilderment. I looked about dazedly. Thus I saw so extraordinary a sight that for a while I could scarcely believe I was not still wrapped in the visionary tumult of my own thoughts. Out of the reigning green had grown a boundless river of softly shimmering globes, each one enfolded in a wondrous fleece of pure cloud. They reached both above and below me to an unknown distance, and not only hid the shining of the green sun, but supplied in place thereof a tender glow of light that suffused itself around me, like unto nothing I have ever seen before or since. In a little I noticed that there was about these spheres a sort of transparency, almost as though they were formed of clouded crystal, within which burned a radiance, gentle and subdued. They moved on past me continually, floating onward at no great speed, but rather as though they had eternity before them. A great while I watched and could perceive no end to them. At times I seemed to distinguish faces amid the cloudiness, but strangely indistinct, as though partly real and partly formed of the mistiness through which they showed. For a long time I waited, passively, with a sense of growing content. I had no longer that feeling of unutterable loneliness, but felt rather that I was less alone than I had been for kalpas of years. This feeling of contentment increased so that I would have been satisfied to float in company with those celestial globules forever. Ages slipped by, and I saw the shadowy faces with increased frequency, also with greater plainness. Whether this was due to my soul having become more attuned to its surroundings, I cannot tell. Probably it was so. But however this may be, I am assured now only of the fact that I became steadily more conscious of a new mystery about me, telling me that I had indeed penetrated within the borderland of some unthought-of region, some subtle, intangible place or form of existence. The enormous stream of luminous spheres continued to pass me at an unvarying rate, countless millions, and still they came, showing no signs of ending, nor even diminishing. Then, as I was borne silently upon the unbuoying ether, I felt a sudden, irresistible forward movement towards one of the passing globes. An instant, and I was beside it. Then, I slid through into the interior without experiencing the least resistance of any description. For a short while, I could see nothing and waited curiously. All at once, I became aware that a sound broke the inconceivable stillness. It was like the murmur of a great sea at calm, a sea breathing in its sleep. Gradually, the mist that obscured my sight began to thin away, and so in time, my vision dwelt once again upon the silent surface of the sea of sleep. For a little I gazed and could scarcely believe I saw aright. I glanced round. There was the great globe of pale fire swimming as I had seen it before, a short distance above the dim horizon. To my left, far across the sea, I discovered presently a faint line as of thin haze, which I guessed to be the shore where my love and I had met during those wonderful periods of soul wandering that had been granted to me in the old earth days. Another, a troubled memory, came to me of the formless thing that had haunted the shores of the Sea of Sleep, the guardian of that silent, echoless place. These and other details I remembered and knew without doubt that I was looking out upon that same sea. With the assurance, I was filled with an overwhelming feeling of surprise and joy and shaken expectancy, conceiving it possible that I was about to see my love again. Intently I gazed around, but could catch no sight of her. At that, for a little, I felt hopeless. Fervently I prayed, and ever peered anxiously. How still was the sea! Down, far beneath me, I could see the many trails of changeful fire that had drawn my attention formerly. Vaguely I wondered what caused them. Also, I remembered that I intended to ask my dear one about them, as well as many other matters. And I had been forced to leave her before the half that I had wished to say was said. My thoughts came back with a leap. I was conscious that something had touched me. I turned quickly. God, thou wert indeed gracious. It was she. She looked up into my eyes with an eager longing. And I looked down to her with all my soul. I should have liked to held her, but the glorious purity of her face kept me afar. Then out of the winding mist she put her dear arms. Her whisper came to me soft as the rustle of a passing cloud. Dearest, she said. That was all, but I had heard, and in a moment I held her to me, as I prayed forever. In a little she spoke of many things, and I listened. Willingly would I have done so through all the ages that are to come. At times I whispered back, and my whispers brought to her spirit face once more an indescribably delicate tint, the bloom of love. Later I spoke more freely, and to each word she listened and made answer delightfully, so that already I was in paradise. She and I, and nothing save the silent, spacious void to see us, and only the quiet waters of the Sea of Sleep to hear us. Long before, the floating multitude of cloud-enfolded spheres had vanished into nothingness. Thus we looked upon the face of the slumberous deeps and were alone. Lone God, I would be thus alone in the hereafter, and yet be never lonely. I had her, and greater than this she had me. Aye, eon aged me, and on this thought, and some others, I hope to exist through the few remaining years that may yet lie between us. Well, at least he's with his dead girlfriend, so that's something. But is it really her? It could be a hallucination. We don't really know. Anyway, we'll see more of what happens in The House on the Borderland next time on Page Turners. This is Margaret Dixon. As always, I enjoyed reading to you, and I hope you enjoyed listening.